Incoming pitch. Spin rate of 2,500 RPM, 95.6 miles per hour.
Adjusting swing, 12 degrees. Proceed with launch angle.
Welcome all to another episode of the Launch Angle Podcast. This is your co-host, Rob D. You can always catch me on Twitter at Deadpool Hitter. And my co-host, Jeff Zimmerman at Jeff W. Zimmerman and Rob Silver at Rob Silver. We got a very good episode for you today. We first start off talking about Jeff Zimmerman's Mining the News article that he does so well over at Fangraphs, just kind of picking up things that maybe you haven't caught during the week while you're doing your baseball evaluations and watching games and prepping for Fab. Jeff always highlights some good stuff that's under the surface in the news. We hit on Reed Detmers if we think there's more to him. If you've drafted him as an early round pitcher, are you okay with what he's done so far? And are you expecting any more? And if there is any more in the tank for him to improve. We talk about Aaron Judge, how much time he might miss with the Yankees, and how you could possibly fill that gap or that void with home runs on your team if you are reliant on him for power, if you can, and in fact, replace any type of power that he provides for your team. And then we highlight Joey Votto on the Reds. I mean, what an infusion of excitement that the Reds have brought to Major League Baseball. Their young prospects are doing well. Joey Votto comes back providing that veteran leadership in first place, 10-game winning streak. Just fantastic stuff. I'm glued to my screen watching the Reds, and the domino effect that the roster has with Joey Votto returning, Will Myers getting waived, and what we could possibly forecast going forward with that roster of the Cincinnati Reds. We talk about SGP standing gain points, and I ask the guys if they kind of have adjusted it in season or just using what they did coming into the season. We talk a little bit about, you know, filling out your draft when you're at the draft. Are you the type to pick the best player available, or are you cornering yourself and always trying to take that last player in a tier? I need this position. And whether the heightened aspects of live drafts can kind of make you feel like every move is too important as it can be, and not just really focusing on picking the best player available. And then we get into a cool thing where we pick our MVPs of each position so far in the fantasy season. So basically like an all-star with all the all-star voting and the all-star game coming up in Major League Baseball. I thought it was a good idea. We're almost at the 50% point in the midway of the season where we each took three spots. Rob took catcher, third base, and a starter. Jeff took first base, shortstop, and a starter. And I took second base, outfield, and a reliever. And we kind of give our best values, per se, or just MVPs of that spot based on draft cost and the production that player has provided. And Rob Silver ends with his Silver Linings playbook that he provides with each episode. And yeah, we had a lot of fun doing this, as we always do. I always thank Rob and Jeff because they're just superstars of the industry, and I'm just so blessed and grateful to be on the mic with them talking fantasy baseball. And if you guys are interested in catching the other two launch angles that we do every month over at the Pull Hitter Patreon, come check that out. They have a free trial over at patreon.com for the entry $5 tier, which will you receive the two launch angle extra podcasts that we do per month. And that's not all you get. You get everything I do. Basically, it comes out to about 7 pods per week that you'll get. I give weekly, daily recaps of the box scores and the news, kind of dig underneath the radar players. You know, not really talking too much superstar to highlight sometimes if a player's in a rut or if they're on a great streak, but mostly trying to unearth those gems that we can possibly have some actionable moves on in Fab and making trades and whatnot. So come check it out. You got 7 days to see if you like it, and there's not to like. You get access to our great Discord where you can talk to everybody who has a like-minded view on fantasy baseball and just baseball in general. We talk about it all day long. We just we love it. We love baseball, and we know you do too if you're listening to this. So we'd welcome you there as well. And here's the episode with Jeff and Rob.
Here's the pitch.
All right, welcome to another episode of the Launch Angle Podcast. I'm one of your co-hosts, Rob DiPietro. I'm joined here by Rob Silver and Jeff Zimmerman. What's going on today, fellas?
Not much. I'm actually, it's like an exciting day. It's the last day I finally have to drive my son around for his driver's ed. It's been like, I feel like I'm more on the road than he is. Like taking him to classes, then he has his driving time at a different one. But today's it. It's done. After I'm done with this podcast, it's my last trip to take him and get some of my summer back.
Get some of your summer back. That sounds like a good plan.
What are you going to do with your time now, Jeff, that he can drive himself around?
I got a ton of yard work to do. I'm not even going to lie about that. I probably got all kinds of varmints limit out there. Who knows? Probably got a buffalo back in the back.
Jeez, a buffalo. You can feed the whole family, though, for all winter from the dead buffalo you're going to have after the yard work's done, I assume.
Yes, but I'll only be able to carry 100 pounds back, you know.
That's good eating.
That's just the way the game is.
Yeah, you don't make the rules. You just follow them. I understand.
Yep. You can shoot three or four of them. You just only can carry 100 pounds back.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, we had some interesting stuff last night. Another debut by another rookie pitcher. You guys get a chance to watch a little bit of Gavin Williams. What do you think about the box scores? Is anything that popped out to you immediately from what Gavin Williams did? And are you expecting another fab splash this weekend from him?
I hadn't had a chance to dive in too much. I don't think, no matter, he could have come out and just been horrible. Like, maybe, I don't know. It had been like woo bad for it not to be. Like, I think he was the one that kind of got really brought down his price when he blew. It was like seven runs in a couple innings or something like that. But Gavin Williams, he was fine last night. Like,
yeah,
it could have been better, but I think it'll give everyone plenty of time to dive in, see what they like. They'll have to make a quick decision. They'll be able to decide a few days. It might be another one of those. Whoever's in first place or really needs to might drop a lot of money on him, a lot of fab, but we'll see how it goes. He's by far from being like perfect in anything he did. So maybe people won't go completely in, but it'll be tough not to.
Rob, am I correct that this was the rookie pitcher you were the most excited about coming into the season, or am I confusing you with somebody else?
I definitely liked him a lot. I thought from just what I saw on the data and just what I heard from prospect analysts and scouts that he seemed like he was locked on, 100 mile an hour fastball, which I didn't see yesterday. I don't know if it was too cold in Cleveland, but big vertical movement, which is over like 18, 19 inches. It was only 15.8 yesterday. So I don't know. I don't know I don't know if it was too cold in Cleveland, but he just looked ordinary.
It was the first day of summer. How cold was it in Cleveland yesterday?
I know, right? Summer solstice comes and it was 62 in Jersey.
Jeez.
Go figure.
I mean, I don't know how much money people still have left. So when we say like go crazy, I guess it only takes one owner to have, $300 left and he can drop $300 on him. The prospect guys do love him. The stuff is ridiculous. I haven't seen what the stuff plus numbers are from last night yet. That's obviously going to influence my bids tremendously once I see this stuff plus data coming out of the start. The one interesting observation, and it's just an observation, of all the rookie pitchers that have been called up so far this year, the hyped rookie pitchers, I should say, Steamer and the Bat basically have identical projections for him. So I don't know what like Gavin Williams did to Steamer. He is the first pitcher that has come up who like the Bat likes basically as much as him. For the Bat, Gavin Williams' projection is still pretty good. For Steamer, Gavin Williams project, like if Steamer is projecting you for a 4.28 ERA, you're not a good pitcher. Whereas if the Bat is projecting you for a 4.41 ERA, you're going to get votes for the Cy Young Award this year. I'm being tongue-in-cheek when I say that, but it is interesting how they're basically identical. Projection, strikeout rate, walk rate, everything is pretty much the same between the two, which you just don't see this year basically at all. So, no, I think every team in almost every format can use Gavin Williams. The only, he's a rookie pitcher, so there's risk there. They're still, like... Do we know what Tristan McKenzie's timeline is? Like 4 to 6 weeks kind of thing, but I don't think it's a shutdown, but there's a lot of, you don't have a great feel. Like I think I think Tristan McKenzie is cuttable in most formats because I just think there's a lot, like that doesn't feel good, but it's Cleveland. Like there are a lot of mouths to feed. So I think Gavin Williams needs to pitch well to stick, but he's a hyped enough prospect. Despite that, Yeah, I think he should be able to do okay, and I think he should get enough run. Like, I'm not sure, but I'm not too worried about that. So yeah, if you have money left, I think you should use it on him because he's probably the best starting pitcher who's going to come up the rest of the season. There's a pretty good chance he's the last really top prospect who's going to get serious run. There may be some guys who will get a few starts, but who have a real shot at getting you 3.5-4 months of starts.
Yeah, the stuff plus on the fastball was 110.
Nobody cares, Rob. Yeah. Why they're listening to a different podcast if they want to hear the stuff plus numbers. I ask lots of things I don't want the answer to. Sorry, go ahead. Tell the people what his stuff plus numbers were.
110 on the fastball, which I guess Trish McKenzie's like a 112. I still don't know really how much.
Yeah, is 110 good? Because is that good or is that bad?
You know, because 100 is not league average.
Nobody knows. Sorry. What was his off-speed stuff? Stuff plus
slider 70, curve 79. Ooh, that's not good. Change that can't up be 134.
Good. Yeah. Oh, 134 must be good. There's no way.
It sounds really good. Nobody knows. You know, I know Peyton Battenfield got a shoulder inflammation and told his Quantrill. So it'll be interesting to see. I mean, he definitely geared up to throw innings. He threw 110 last year and he guess they could bump him up this year a lot. So yeah, be interesting to see what he comes through. Jeff, you were busy on the mining the news this week. I wanted to ask you guys a couple of questions here. We'll save the Reds for last because that's definitely the best part of the mining the news. But Reed Detmers, you guys think what we're seeing from him is all he has? You think he has another level, or pretty much what you see is what you get from Reed Detmers right now?
Looking through him, he's pretty close to having everything he can do. His issue is he doesn't have a third pitch. He's got an okay fastball, a really good slider right now, and an okay curve, like not even an average curve, definitely below average, but at least it's sort of a third pitch. He's only throwing his fastball like 40% of the time, which is kind of nice. Like, he's really kind of leaning into that slider. But like I said, without a third pitch, I think he's might be about maxed out. The one other thing he could do is just not walk as many batters. He's got over 3 walks per 9. If he had it closer to like 2, 2.5, you could see an improvement there. But I think it's really tough. Like I said, he's one of those ones like in the offseason, like something else has to happen for him to take a step forward. And it's just not happening right now.
I don't know. He has a 28% strikeout rate. What do you think of the next, like, what's wrong with the level he's at right now? Like, it's a pretty good level for him, even with the walk rate. Like, I agree with Jeff. Obviously, you'd love that 9% walk rate to be like a 5% walk rate. But frankly, if he had a 29% strikeout rate and a 5% walk rate, he's a top 10 pitcher in baseball. So like so Yuri Perez, lower strikeout rate than Reed Detmers. Braxton Garrett, lower strikeout rate. Shane McClanahan, lower strikeout rate. Hunter Brown, lower strikeout. Joe Rod. Like, I'm naming the top guys in baseball. So I get the question. Again, the walk rate's not nothing, but it's also not atrocious, 9%. And when you put the strikeout rate with the walk rate, like, it's pretty good. So I think if you have Reed Detmers, stop being the guy who just complains about stuff, Rob, because that's not you, that's somebody else. And just be happy. I think it's really good. I think you are seeing a breakout for Detmers in a lot of ways. I think you are seeing an emergence for Reed Detmers.
The whip is just, I don't know. I guess the watch.
Yeah, it's not good.
It's like I said, the strikeouts are just one category. So it's kind of like, with just the two pitches, he's getting hit around. Like, that's going to
put it this way. What's the difference between him and Hunter Green right now? Like, if you put him and Hunter Green side by side, both healthy, him and Hunter Green to me are basically the same pitcher. Hunter Green's stuff is sexier than Reed Detmers, but I think they're basically the same guy to me. And I mean that as a compliment to Reed Detmers, not a shot at Hunter Green, though maybe it is a bit of a shot at Hunter Green. Like, they're almost, they're a Spider-Man gif to me if you don't watch them. If you watch them, then I get why Hunter Green, or if you look at pitcher ninja pitcher gifs, then I see, or maybe their stuff plus is different, because I know stuff plus really likes on Hunter Green. But like in terms of actual results this year, they're the same pitcher. So that's to me a breakout for Reed Detmers already.
Yeah, and I was just kind of getting that off of, again, just what I've seen off of Twitter and what I've heard some people say on podcast about what they weren't satisfied with Reed Detmers. And so I kind of looked at his numbers and I said, yeah, I mean, obviously for when he was drafted at 100 ADP or drafted for $20 in an auction draft, maybe that's not what you're expecting, but it's kind of in line with, you know, what I think he can be. The scare is 3.8. It's pretty much right on line. The ball percentage is pretty solid. Probably could bring his walk rate down a tad, but yeah, I think it's really solid right now. It's just, I guess what you're not getting is those double start weeks, right, from him that maybe guys want, but it just seems to be pretty good right now. But like, well, you said,
it's a slightly different question though, Rob, is like, was he wildly overdrafted this year? That I would say, yes, he was. Yeah. I think people had crazy expectations for him, but maybe I'm answering the question as somebody who didn't really expect much didn't expect a big step forward for Reed Detmers. I'm sure if I went back to my preseason projection and look what he's done, he's earning. I shouldn't say that. That sounds arrogant. He's not been wildly underperforming where I would have had him this year. Just put it that way.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fair enough. Jeff, you had some notes here on Aaron Judge. What are we expecting from him? When do you look like he's coming back? It seems like it's still far ways away.
The note said it was far away, and I did somewhere looking through the news this where I saw like there was some kind of improvement, but I didn't read the whole article on what it was. I just read the headline and kept it to read later. But it just doesn't sound good. They kept describing it. It's different, like how he got there, but it's kind of the same thing. Jazz Chisholm's kind of dealing with eventually, just like kind of the pain that they both have to deal with. So I don't know how long it's going to be. And also it sounds like, oh, he could come back early if he could DH. And it's like that whole team's full of DHs. It's like it's like the White Sox, you know, it's like, oh my God. So who knows how it's going to happen. I don't know how. It's one of those ones. It's like, well, you've lost your first round talent. You just don't replace that. You just hope for the best. Someone else can stand, you know, step up or whatever, but it wasn't. It's one of those deals where hope you got a big enough lead to begin with in the power categories.
Yeah, that's what I was, you know, I wanted to ask you guys, if you're kind of reliant on him for power, you know, is there a way to supplement it, or do you just got to, you know, float by until he comes back and gives you that boost to kind of, you know, where you were in the standing? If you were first and you dropped the third, are you expecting to go back up, or how do you stay afloat with a guy like Judge missing?
Pete Alonso was cut in your league, and pick up Pete Alonso because I think he could fill in nicely for Aaron Judge.
Sorry, this guy's got both of them in our league and our online championship. It's he's got the meatball power right there.
Exactly. God, we still got one of them back.
Yeah,
I think all you can do is grind out plate appearances with an eye towards power to try to fill in. Obviously, you're not replacing the best power hitter in baseball off the waiver wire. So all you can do is have a bias towards power and try to maximize, not with one guy. I don't think there's one player. This is your Aaron Judge replacement. It's going to be a week to week. Just grind it out and hope that Aaron Judge comes back actually in 4 to 6 weeks as opposed to like in September. I think that's my best advice. If I had a magic bullet of like, this guy is 92% available, go pick him up and he'll do what Aaron Judge does, then I'd be full of shit because that guy doesn't exist. And I wouldn't tell you guys because like, if I had such magic powers, why would I just give it away? No, like there's no answer like that.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. I think that the best that you could do is, I think maybe where people go wrong is trying to focus too much on that power and maybe not just grabbing the best guy available off the wire.
Play the princess.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's like you could chase Ryan O'Hearn in his recent production, or you could not do that and just pick up a guy with seven games this week. And
I mean, in reality, let's break this down. Aaron Judge, when he's like last year crazy pace, is hitting you two home runs a week. That's 52 home runs. if you can find one home run a week by streaming a guy, which when I say it that way, it's like, well, of course I can find one home run. It's freaking hard. That's a 26 home run pace. And there's both some luck involved and like that's not that easy. But if you can do it, you're falling off one home run per week behind peak Aaron Judge versus streaming and getting yourself a 7-game week and like running into a home run each week. Most teams are positioned that you winning or losing the league won't just be that. Now, the problem is Aaron Judge is doing more than just hitting the home runs. He's also getting you runs. He's also getting you RBIs. Last year, he was also getting stolen bases. So, like, it's not just the power. But on the power, like, find yourself a home run a week from that roster spot, and you're losing one home run compared to what you should have expected, you know, normalized for Aaron Judge. When you put it that way, it's not that hard to do. Good luck.
Right, when Jeff? You put it that way.
Yeah, I was looking through the main event roster ship percentage, and good luck trying to get even like a half home run.
Yeah, it's funny how people, like, when you say it that way, like, look, I streamed this guy and I didn't get the 3 home runs I was expecting. I was like, really? You were expecting like a 70, an 80 home run pace from your streamer this week? Like, wow, you're playing a different game than I am, apparently.
Yeah, it's tough. It's not that easy. You just, like you said, you go for volume, you go for Coors matchup, you go for some lefty righty stuff, but that's the best you could do. Like that, if you're expecting like 100% Aaron Judge off the wire, then that guy would have been drafted in the first place. Let's move to Mr. Canada, Joey Votto, coming back. The Reds are storming. They're in first place. I mean, I've been watching the Reds nonstop for a week now between Ellie De La Cruz, Matt McClain, India, Joey Votto coming back. It's just a good time to be a Reds fan. And obviously him returning, Votto has had some domino effects into the lineup. So I just wanted to see your guys' take on the Reds. You think they can make a run at a playoff spot? And, you know, what can we expect with Votto, you know, the other players on the team, and maybe Christian Encarnacion Strand, and what his possibility of playing time might be in the future?
Oh, man. I'll start off with this. As of right now, it looks like there's 3 platoons that the team is going with. Friedel, and I think Fairchild got demoted, so it's not obvious if he's no longer in one. In center field, the big game Saturday, they face a lefty, so it'll happen again. Fraley, he obviously needs to be in one. It looks like he's in Senzel. So Senzel is probably droppable almost in all formats on a short side of a platoon. And then Benson and like some weird movement and like Newman seem to be in a platoon. I think they're moving Steer to the outfield then, which would be nice. Good position flexibility. So it seems like there's 3 platoons with some decent bats at this point. And I don't know what's going to happen when Encarnacion Strand gets there. I'm just looking at it. I'm guessing Steer's just going to permanently move to the outfield, and possibly Benson and Newman are kind of gone. I don't know. It's just like, he's definitely better than them. He's probably better than Steer. Maybe Steer's the one gone. But it's a fun lineup. It's deep. And I think, talking about their playoff, I think the chances are there with the lineup. I think it's going to come down to what kind of the pitching they have at the end of the season. It's just not the greatest looking rotation right now.
I think the most interesting thing about the lineup right now from a fantasy perspective, I mean, well, there's a lot of that. It's not the most interesting thing. I think Joey Votto should be owned in every single format if he's going to play every single day. Now, we don't know that he's going to play every single day because the only lefty they have faced so far, lefty starting pitcher, was his first game back. Needless to say, they weren't going to platoon him on his first game back when, you know, there were montages and he was in a Mounties outfit coming to the ballpark that day. But my strong gut is they may give him the, like, Saturday is a day off. So I think he's a play 6 out of 7, different from a pure platoon. But in this day and age, like, if he's playing 6 out of 7 games in that lineup, in that ballpark, and he's swinging the bat well, which again, it's been three games, so I'm not judging that based on the home run or anything else. But if he is,
hey, that's where you're getting your three home runs a week, right there, Joey Votto.
Joey Votto, it's not that crazy. Like 2021 isn't that long ago. Joey Votto was awesome in 2021. If Joey Votto's healthy, it's not crazy that Joey Votto could be a productive fantasy player in pretty much, like, maybe not in 10 team leagues, but certainly in 12 and 15. So to the extent Joey Votto is not owned in your league and you can fit in a first baseman, I would at the very least want Joey Votto on my bench to see how he's swinging the bat and if he is in fact playing every single day. And if he is playing every single day and swinging well, I think he's better than all kinds of first basemen who are being started in 12 team leagues, never mind 15 team leagues. So I'm excited because, like, you're what's wrong with you if you're not cheering for Joey Votto to have a playoff run? Like, Joey Votto playing playoff baseball for the Reds this year would be the greatest thing. Like, I can't even imagine it. Their pitching staff is atrocious still. But the only good thing is their division is even worse. Like, so somebody has to make the playoffs from that division. Why not the Cincinnati Reds? Maybe they'll trade for, I don't know, Sonny Gray at the trade deadline or, like...
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple options on the White Sox, right? You got Giolito, yeah. Lynn, or maybe even Cease. Like, if they want to go that route, there's some totally. There's some options out there.
And they have a deep enough farm system beyond those top guys. They're obviously not trading the top guys. There's no pitcher that you're trading those guys for. But it's not like they – when you have a lineup that deep, you have other guys you can trade. I also think that, like, as great as Diaz has been, and Diaz has been – a revelation and great for fantasy given what you cost for him, they could use another arm or two setting him up. So I think it's not just on the starting side, though obviously they need some starting pitching depth and just average starting pitchers. They're like Giolito would be awesome. Lance Lynn, if he gets his act together, would be awesome. They just need average starting pitchers right now. They just need guys who can go 5-6 innings and give up three runs reliably. That's what I think they need to be able to win this division with that lineup. And that they don't have enough of those guys right now.
Yeah. And I think, you know, like even someone like Will Benson, who's just, you know, he'd been pretty solid ever since he came back up from the Reds. And I don't know if he's a trade chip or just a guy that they want to see in the lineup versus righties. But it'd be interesting. They do have some chips to throw around, and turns out it definitely took the biggest hit, I think, so far from what I've seen in the, And the playing time, and even with his multi eligibility and versatility on the field, I was kind of surprised to see him out at least, you know, in only starting two of the last five versus right-handed pitchers. So, but maybe
so as of right now, sorry, Rob.
Yeah,
at Fangraphs, Fangraphs has the Brewers as 46% chance to make the playoffs. Both the Cubs and the Reds are at 21%. The Cards at 14%, the Pirates at 5%. I would fade the Brewers number pretty hard. The projections like the Brewers a ton more than I think the reality on the field is. I also just don't think the Cubs have been playing. Obviously, the Cubs have been, you know, the proverbial roller coaster. I don't know. I just don't think they're that good either. So it's not that I like think the Reds are awesome right now. It's just like somebody has to make it. The Cards' stupid friggin' voodoo magic. Like, would it shock anybody if the Cards go on an 18-3 run at some point that makes no sense whatsoever? just to be clear, Jack Flaherty will still have a 1-6 whip, even if they do that. I concede that bet, but it wouldn't shock me if Goldie and Arenado just find a way to carry that lineup for a big stretch, and they just find some way to do it, but why not the Reds? How awesome would that be?
It would be fantastic, and I totally agree with you. Wouldn't be crazy if the Cardinals did it. They made runs like that before, and it's still so early in the season, but man, I'm just rooting for that team not to go on that run and just have the Reds get in there. It's so much fun. It's so good for baseball. Like I said, I've been glued to my screen just watching the Reds, and it's just exciting. It's super exciting. Hey, folks, it's the pole hitter. Just going to take the quick time right now and give you the opportunity to learn about Underdog Fantasy Baseball. If you got that feeling like, maybe you can't make any moves in your league right now, in your home league, your NFBC league, whatever kind of league you're playing, your team is toast, your players are just not playing well, just trash, you can kind of just kind of recoup it, give another shot at it, grab your rally caps and get back into the action on Underdog Fantasy. It's the easiest place to play fantasy baseball right now. They have a contest all the way up until July 14th. It's called the 7th Inning Stretch. It's a live MLB best ball. Going to draft all the way up until July 14th, and it's drafting a team for the second half of the season. It's a best ball format, so all you have to do is go over, join the 7th Inning Stretch, you draft your team, and that's it. No waivers, no trades, no in-season management, no fab. You draft 20 players, you get the best cumulative scores in your starting lineup for 3 pitchers, 3 infielders, 3 outfielders, and 1 flex. You can draft as many as you want. You could draft 7 outfielders, you could draft 5, whatever you choose to do. Each regular week of the season, they have a cool playoff format that determines the end of the winner. It's really awesome. Getting started is simple. You go to underdogfantasy.com. You sign up with my promo code, the pull hitter. So P-U-L-L-H-I-T-T-E-R. So promo code pull hitter. Underdog doubles your initial deposit up to $100. And the 7th inning stretch also has $150,000 in total prizes. It's only $7 to enter. You could do a draft in literally 12 minutes. You can do it in the bathroom. You could do it while you're taking a walk. You could do it on your break from work, wherever you want. So simple. What are you waiting for? Sign up for Underdog with a promo code PULLHITTER and get that first deposit doubled so you can draft with me in the 7th inning stretch today. If you are going to draft, you're going to sign up. Hit me up on Twitter or email, and we'll get involved in a draft together. All right, let's get into some in-season management talk, some strategy talk. I wanted to ask you guys about your current SGP. We're almost 50% into the season right now. Just like, how are you handling the SGP? Has it changed from the beginning of the season? Is it just off of the current standings, or kind of like a blend of what you thought was going to be coming into the season and now? And like, what do you expect like the end of season compared to what we came into the season? Like, what would be the biggest difference there? Jeff?
I haven't even looked. I'm not gonna lie. I know, like, oh, I need steals. These three guys might help me. I don't know. There's just so few options. Like, I don't feel like I'm playing like per week, and like this guy's just got an extra game, so I'm going with him. I just think like the number of options, and especially when it gets down toward the end, it's, I don't even, like, if a guy has, like, made, like, one at bat, might move him up, like, even on the weekly projections, like, a ton. It's like, okay, it's really, do I think there's any upside or anything like that? I mean, it's, I don't know if it's, like, so much gut plays as, like, okay, these guys are close. What do I think can happen? Where do I think the playing time could end up being? Is it just, like I said, am I literally just, this is a one-week play, or is there something more that could be here? So, I don't know, just like in each league right now, I'm kind of just winging it for like, what do I need and who do I think can provide it for me? And if I was just like using SGPs, there's no way I would have added Samad Taylor last week. Like, all the projections really don't like him great. And so it's like, oh, he's not there. But I was like, oh, I kind of need some stolen bases. I'll kind of go with the upside here. And hopefully, you know, I can get some good production out of him. But I do, like, as a whole, it's just an interesting year where, like, the stolen bases are all up because of the rules. Home runs are up because of the ball. All the offense is up because of that. It wasn't a situation I plan on, and I'm never going to again with the way until MLB, like, maybe for, like, 3 years in a row doesn't just change the ball instead of, like, every year. So I just assume that they're just going to use the mush ball from last year and just make my decisions on that. And then for the pitchers, I just assume that they use freaking happy fun ball and make my decisions on that, because I just have no idea where things are going to be. So I'm kind of on my own with the standing gains points. And once it's in season, I don't really care.
So I do the opposite. I do care. First off, Samad Taylor, it's not that the projections don't like Samad Taylor. It's Fangraphs doesn't like Samad Taylor. If you normalize his...
You see our freaking anti-Samad Taylor. We just opened our own, you know, discussion on him.
It was his playing time that was the problem. If you normalize his playing time and assume that he held the job all season, which is a massive assumption, and it's most likely wrong assumption. But if you're buying into him, you have to sort of normalize him. So like as of at least Sunday, kind of 335 plate appearances rest of season was a normalized playing time. If you're playing most days, hitting top half of the lineup kind of thing. And I got, just using an average of the bat and steamer, Samad Taylor is the 65th best hitter rest of season, which is obviously worth a ton. Now, Dairon Blanco is even more, if you make that assumption, up there. He was like the 41st best hitter rest of season. So I like what for those guys, I always normalize playing time, not because I actually think they will play every single day the rest of the season. But if I'm buying in for more than a week, I sort of have to make that assumption and see if I'm right, how this plays out. So I do update my SGPs, as I think I've mentioned previously. I do SGPs differently from how I think most people do, certainly the way that Jeff and Tanner do it for the process. I use the overall standings from the NFBC for the 15-team SGPs as opposed to like an average of a bunch of different leagues. Why do I do it that way? Good question. That's a long thing, but that's just how I do it. And this year in particular, like if you're going to keep using SGPs, I think you have to update them. I think there's an argument like whatever, like the Jeff, once the season starts, whatever, I'll figure it out. And I kind of know how guys are. I can eyeball projections for the rest of the season. And I'm just trying to maximize week by week. I totally think that's defendable. But if you're going to use SGPs, if you're going to have a rest of season spreadsheet, if you're going to use like that kind of analysis, it's just changed so much. So let me give you some just like actual specific examples of how it's changed that are easy to understand. Because SGPs, especially when you're using like 800 teams, the numbers are like can be gibberish to people. So as part of the ERA formula for SGPs, which anybody who knows SGPs, you know, you have the denominator and then you have the average that you're subtracting from it. So coming out of last year, the ERA average that I used was a 3.66 ERA. I don't know if that came from the process or if it came from a three-year weighted average. I don't even remember. But all my formulas going into the season were 3.66 ERA was the ERA plug that I used in my formula. If I take a straight average of every single team in the NFBC main as of this morning, because I just did it knowing we were talking about this on the podcast, the average ERA is 4.06. That is a massive, massive difference between a 3.66 ERA and a 4.06 ERA. Now, again, if you were doing a three-year weighted average, if you're doing anything that would lower it, bring it closer to 3.66, that's just 1 year. You can, and it's not even 1 year, it's half of a year. But it's more likely to go up than come down the rest of the season. So that if you're using 3.66 still as your ERA plug, you can say, well, on the one hand, but it applies to every player. So as long as every player is being impacted by that the same, then what difference does it make? But the problem is it weighs ERA then in your SGP formula incorrectly. And it does skew guys who are like low ERA, like the Marcus Stroman of the world will be impacted differently from the, I guess now Spencer Strider of the world, if it's 3.66 versus 4.06, because the relative weight of strikeouts versus ERA are different if you're using a different number. That's a big, big change. WHIP went from 1.19 to 1.26. Like, again, half a season, it's not that is the right number to use. Everybody knows the difference between a 1.19 WHIP right now in the standings and a 1.26 WHIP is like I'm kicking ass in WHIP and I'm mediocre as hell in WHIP. That's absolutely the average right now. Wow. What was interesting to me, and then I'll stop rambling, is batting average, because you asked about batting average, Rob.
Yep.
I was expecting a massive difference in batting average. The average batting average last year in the NFBC main, or maybe it's, again, the number I just got from the process, which is probably a weighted average, was 2.496. So 250, pretty much bang on 250. Right now it's 253. So on the one hand, that is a difference. It's not nothing, but it's not as big as I would have expected it to be. Then from a denominator perspective, this is my last thing, I promise. It will shock nobody that stolen base denominator is just wildly different. Like the relative value of one home run to one stolen base going into the season versus today are just two different numbers. Like the context for stolen bases is just wildly different.
Wow. Yeah, that's, I thought the average would be a little more because I guess I was looking at, no, that makes sense. Cause the 80th percentile only went from 256 to like 260. So
I just want to be clear for people. That is not me averaging all the at bats and averaging all the hits. It's me averaging batting average. It's just a lazy way to do it. I just didn't spend the time to do it otherwise. So that may not be precisely right of what the NFBC batting average is. Whatever, it's a fucking podcast in mid-June. It's close enough. I figured, but I was expecting a bigger difference nonetheless.
Yeah, and I don't know if I was just feeling any bias toward how the recent production of like a guy like Ahmed Rosario it had done right now, but it just felt like maybe a kind of like there's a group of guys that I tend to like and tend to draft, and you know, like the Ahmed Rosarios, the maybe even the Andrew Benintendi later on, and it's done like Gene Segura, and obviously his production is not there right now. But I just was thinking aloud if maybe those kind of players, because the home bases and batting average is up, are they becoming less valuable in our game, in our roto game at least? You know, so I don't know. I was thinking that stuff out loud. It is the middle of June. What are we gonna do?
It's crazy. The season's half over. Like next week, the season's half over.
I know. Isn't that wild? It's wild. It goes fast. And it does go very fast. It goes very fast, and it's just make sure you're having fun doing it. So I was looking back at some of my drafts from early in the season, main events, online championships, and I found a couple examples where, you know, I was so hyper focused on getting the last guy in a tier, or you know, you need this player here, stuff like that, and it, instead of just taking the best player available. And obviously everything right now is in hindsight, but you know, I just have to recalibrate my brain a little bit better, I think, at the draft table, because it feels like, you know, when you're in Vegas and you're in those live rooms, that everything is just so much more magnified, important, and like you feel like this desperation mode to just find all these little, you know, fill out your team in certain ways. And I think I just got to do a better job of just getting the best player available. I don't know if you guys have found any examples of that, or you could think of anything off the top of your head, like, man, I should have took this player right here. And like, you know, but I really wanted that second closer.
Oh, I don't know. I think I felt like I did that the year before and it got me in a little bit of trouble. Yeah. And I just looked back at, like, I kind of have my drafts and my draft rankings going in each one. And when I went over Aaron Judge in each one of them to pick someone else that like fit my draft better, I was just like, I think over those first few rounds, I just need to try to get the best players available and then come up with a plan on how to deal with that later. If it happens to be, I get Freddie Freeman and Alonzo, like, okay, I've got two first basemen. How do I deal with this? Or if it's somehow the board just gives me, starting pitching, like, okay, I've got three starters. How am I going to deal with this after this? That's where your top talents are. And the biggest thing too, going back to seeing gains points, like up there, it's kind of weird. Like, oh, there's like 3 points of standing gains points between these guys. And they may be like 3 or 4 spots difference. But if you have 3 standing gains points from like the 100th on, that might be the difference between the 100th and the 200th ranked player. Like, it's so tough to make up that points. It's like, I'm just going to try to get as many as I can early on. And then if, like I said, if they're close, I'll, you know, keep my flexibility. But I've never been a Freddie Freeman, but I was gifted him in a few places in the Alonzo. And I was just like, all right, I'm just going to take the best player. And it's just tough to make up 3 or 4 standing gains points later on.
Yeah, I mean, my big regret, it's not really answering your question, Rob, but I'll say my big regret.
Counts.
I've been very good so far this year at the hitters that I had true conviction on going into the draft. And I don't mean in the first 10 rounds. Like, I mean, JD Martinez, Jose Siri, the guys who I went into the draft saying, I'm going to get this hitter every single draft. I'm going to pounce. If somebody wants him even more, then obviously I'll miss them, but I'm going to aggressively go get these hitters. And it's not a long list, but I will win or lose. And again, if you're taking guys in the middle rounds or the late rounds, you're not actually going to win or lose if you miss on them, but I will go and get these guys. Had really good targets, and they've worked out. On starting pitchers, and my strategy this year, as I think we've discussed, was volume. I want bench starting pitchers. I had a list of like 25 guys in every draft, and it's like I want 7 of these 25 guys, but they're largely interchangeable to me. And I don't know if I was lazy. I didn't spend enough time getting conviction on these are the 3 I really, really want. But I really haven't nailed any of them. I can't say a single one of them that it's like, thank goodness I have this guy instead of having to stream the schlump. Because while numerically there's no doubt, like if I were actually streaming starting pitchers instead of the crap, like my 11th starting pitcher, it would be even worse. But it's not like they're good. You never want to fight the last battle. So 2024 is going to be different. But boy, I need to go into 2024 drafts for better or for worse. Like these are the 2 starting pitchers after pick 225 that I'm going to get. And if I'm wrong, I'm just wrong. But I'm jumping them 3 rounds every single draft because I just believe in these guys. I didn't really believe in any of them, but I knew I had to get some of them. And I'm suffering, whatever. It's fantasy fucking baseball, even when it's a lot of money, it's not actually suffering. But I wish I had the JD Martinez of pitching. And the problem is I can't even tell you who that is. Like even now I can't tell you, boy, if only I had really believed in this guy, everything would be better. I wish I had a couple of JD Martinez's on the pitching side.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you too. Like my guy was Jose Suarez, which was did not work out. Like I jumped him up. I thought there was a lot there. And I was just like, well, that didn't work out. I mean, and it was like the year before I did that with like Tyler Anderson and Cortez. And it was like, that worked great. I was like, oh, I'll use the same plan. The same plan did not work. Probably like the only late guy I got, which is not great at all, was Kikuchi. And I was just like, when he's your win, Things are going bad.
Yeah. And the thing is, this is the part of the problem is you can say, well, like Marcus Stroman would have been a good pick. Every single one of my teams would be doing better right now if I had Marcus Stroman. But there's no world in which I convinced myself last winter I need to be all in on Marcus Stroman. Like, it's just not how my approach works. It's not how my analysis works. So even knowing what I know now, I can't really convince myself, boy, I really screwed up on Marcus Stroman, even though objectively I did, if that makes sense.
Yeah, Stroman was one guy that I got on two of my 15 team leagues and 2 of my 4 15 team leagues, and I just kind of like, you know, that's one of those guys I didn't have super conviction to like say I want him on all 4, but the guys I did get on more teams than him are like Brady Singer, Miles Mikolas, and Steven Matz, and just, you know, boom, 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 just one disaster after another. And I was like, God damn.
At least you didn't make a Jack Flaherty bet like a dumbass.
God, at least he's had some moments where he's been, shining, but he's just
the problem is those moments. The problem is the other moments.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah, it's fun looking back at this stuff and trying to speculate and kind of seeing where you could have zigged, where you zagged instead.
The problem again is convincing yourself. I was light in power last year. So you go power the first 6 rounds and then you're like, yeah, but now I have no pitching saves or stolen bases. Like you really need to learn from seasons, but you can't refight the last battle. Like that's classic war mistakes. Right. So it's need to be careful about these lessons.
Yep, absolutely. It's and actually, great article that Steve Weimer wrote in Baseball HQ, just talking about how if you think you're good at something, like people say, like, oh, I nail late round pitchers, like make sure you actually do. And it's not just like you found one guy the 1 year and then really
one guy in 2017 that you're still living off your glory about nailing him.
100% And that's the best advice. I read that article and I was like, man, that's just totally right. It made it spurred me to go into doing some more into my team.
It's also a classic example of like, if you take every single year, call it 10 late pitchers, by just like luck, you're going to luck in. Or if you take every year, 3 late closer specs, you're going to luck into a guy every second or third year. It means sweet fuck all in terms of the likelihood that you're going to get it next year. And for 2024, all we care about is, will I be able to do it next year? And I don't know that even if you have been good at something like that once or twice or even 3 years in a row, it means anything in terms of your ability to do it next year other than luck.
Right. There's no predictive value in that.
There is. Maybe if you spend a ton of time scouring the reliever market, then you are better than somebody who is just kind of half-assing it in terms of predicting who is going to emerge. Like, I can buy that it is a skill, but I don't know. It's risky.
Yeah, for sure. All right. I figured we'd do something fun here. And since the MVP, the All-Star season is kind of rolling around and the voting is going into effect.
Are we doing a quiz, Rob?
No more quizzes. No more quizzes. Think maybe we could just choose our fantasy All-Stars right now. Like I said, we're kind of like midway through the season right now. So I gave everyone an assignment of which position to choose. So Rob, why don't you lead us off at the catcher position and tell us who's been your catcher MVP so far in this fantasy season?
So, I mean, there are runner-ups. Like, I think Dalton Varsho, as I've tweeted about 1,000 times, having an underrated fantasy catcher season. I think Will Smith is awesome, and it wouldn't surprise me at all if Will Smith ends the season as catcher one. But given his cost and what he's doing offensively, Jonah Heim is easily the fantasy catcher MVP so far. I mean, the fact that Jonah Heim has 54 RBIs blows me away. Like, it's just wild, the line. You never want to do the just double the line, even when you're at the exact halfway mark. But he's on pace to get 100 RBIs out of the catcher position with a good batting average. Like, he's doing everything you could possibly want him to do. And while I'm not sure that that lineup will stay quite as hot as they've been, it's pretty much skill supported. Like, there's nothing that jumps out about what Jonah Heim has done other than, again, the RBIs are a little bit elevated, you have to assume, the rest of the season. But there's nothing that says this is a massive fluke. So he's my easy midway point fantasy all-star catcher, starting catcher.
I love that choice. Plus, he has the Donnie Ecker effect that everyone likes to point out, too. He got it. The swing coach is finally working out. All right, Jeff, who do you got at first base?
This was actually harder than I thought. There's the top guys are all got the top spots. There's no one that's sneaking in there. Mm-hmm. And then there's like a group that all were going late. They're all kind of right there in a row with Yandy Diaz, Deer. But I'm going to go with a guy that's carried me in way too many leagues that no one seemed to want, was Josh Naylor. Mm. I think the platoon bit is it's disappeared right now. He's just knocking the crap out of the ball. But like I said, if you want to go with Diaz or you want to go with Steer, like Steer just got first base. We weren't really drafting him as that. I can understand. But I mean, possibly Christian Walker. He's done pretty good too this year. But for me, it'll be Naylor. But like I said, it's kind of been a nice chalk year with the first baseman, with the top guys performing as expected.
Yeah, really, and I mean, that's the thing. As you said, Jeff, like, if you drafted Freddie Freeman in the late first or early second round and get what you're getting from Freddie Freeman, it's such a win, even though it cost you. Like, you didn't get him cheap, but it's such a win getting that production from him.
And Jeff, I know he was dropped in our OC back in the middle of April, and I didn't have a backup bid when I scooped him up that next week. I forgot to ask you if you ever, like, we just didn't have a roster spot for him, or we just weren't interested at the time because he was still had that little bit of a platoon effect in the 12 teamers.
Well, in ours, I'm loaded at first in ours. Yeah. I think it's what happened. That happens a little bit in those OCs. There was even some week I think with Matt McClain, when he first came up, like he didn't have the other position. I was like, am I going to spend that much for a bench bat? Like I was kind of loaded at middle. It just happens sometimes in the 12s that some teams just aren't out. It's something to look for to kind of see if the top guys actually need that position in 12s. And 15s, I'll find room for them. But sometimes in 12s, it's like I'm just not going to pay up for it, or there's just nothing else that, you know, no spots for them.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's fair. I got a ton of Josh Naylor, a lot of DC stuff on him too. So that's an awesome choice there. And I totally agree. The first base at the top has been totally chalk. If you drafted anyone at the top there, you're definitely not upset what they brought to you. For my second base here, I'm going to go back to the Reds and go to Jonathan India, who was 2 years ago, he was a hot grab, going as high as pick 80. This year, he fell down to the 156 he was in the main events this season, and he's just been nothing short of spectacular. I think he's just providing you a ton of runs, good power, good speed, and he's just going to sit at the top of that lineup now. That's just gotten better. 10 home runs, 12 stolen bases, one of only 14 guys who have 10-10 right now in the season, and I think that he's going to go right back up to that land where he was 2 years ago. So I think anyone who kind of focused on Jonathan India up the middle later on in draft, you definitely got your money's worth there for sure. All right, Rob, back to you for third base.
I'm going to go back to it's the land of wealth and opportunities, going to the Texas Rangers. I'm going to pick Josh Jung. He's basically done what you thought Austin Riley was going to do for you at third base. And I hate myself that I wasn't on him. I have him nowhere. But he's been, from a fantasy perspective, just like a beast for you. And when you add in what his cost was, it's pretty easy call for me. And with the strikeout rate coming down, like 26% is entirely sustainable. And like he can have a really good career for them. His home run to fly ball rate, like he may even have upside on the power department as the ball starts flying when it gets really hot there this summer. So I love Josh Jung, what he's doing in Texas. And if you have him on your fantasy team, well done to you. I don't.
Yeah, I wonder if he's going to take that massive leap, you know, how high of a leap he's going to take next year too. It'll be interesting to see if he take that Austin Riley type leap into the top, what, 80-70, and then Riley had another monster year and he went up into, you know, top three rounds. So see if Junk could match that path to the top of the draft list. Jeff, right back to you here. We got for shortstop.
It's Wander Franco. There's,
yeah.
I'll throw up Thario Estrada and Bryson Stott of having really good years for you drafting them at, and you were probably happy with what you're getting. But Wander's just, he's carrying some teams right now across the board. I mean, he's not getting you the home runs, but his batting average and stolen bases are just unbelievable. And there's a lot of guys that they might say in the first round. He will go in the top two rounds. We'll have to see how everything kind of works out, but he's just moved himself into, like, yeah, the top guys in the game right now, especially with those stolen bases. Really could pair him up with another power bat and be good. I think that's the only issue, is that he really it's like a non-zero in the stolen bases. And I'll drop the comparison. I hate it. It was like Pete Whit Merrifield again. I think I've said that with some other people, where you have the stolen bases, you have the average, but just kind of some limited power. So that ends up being a second round person, and he's just got better name to him. So I expect him, he'll go higher. He'll be younger. They'll hope for more upside. So no, he's it. There's no one else close, in my opinion.
31 stolen base attempts, which is just freaking super surprising. And the 24 stolen bases has just been fascinating. Yeah, that's a good pick right there. Only one share in a DC, and a 400 nonetheless, so that's good. But definitely wish I had a little more of that. All right, I'm going to kick off the outfield here. And I thought about a couple of guys up at the top. You know, you can go Acuna, you can go Corbin Carroll. And obviously they should be MVPs and all-stars, of course. So I'm going to go down a little bit further into the draft and ADP 289 in the main event this year and look at Jorge Soler.
Connor, boy.
Yeah, it's my boy. He was the only, like, really, like, oh, I'm waiting for this guy, and did exactly what I needed him to do. But, you know, just been really solid across the board. And, you know, I'm glad I finally hit a power bat that late. I just look back now. Last 2 years, just like all my power specs in that range is just the Miguel Sano chase, right? That's always chasing him and for power. And this year, even like some Spencer Torkelson in some spots that just hasn't come to total fruition. But Toler had been everything that I thought of. Some and another guy, too, that I had as a close runner up, and pretty close to him in ADP was Lane Thomas of the Nationals. Just
who's been awesome too.
He's been really awesome. Just runs, ribbies, stolen bases, homers, and sitting at the top of that lineup of the Nationals. So, all right, Rob, bring us to pitching. You're going with one starting pitcher.
You know, sometimes when you're doing all-star selection, you don't necessarily go with the best pick, but you got to go with like the heart, like good story, a heartwarming story. To the,
I love
that,
it. Of course.
That makes you feel well, better.
Got to be one.
There's certainly better starting pitchers from a fantasy perspective in the first half of this year. Like Framber's been awesome. Sugar Shane's been great. Zach Gallen with a few hiccups has been awesome. My guy is Clayton Kershaw. Clayton Kershaw has been spectacular. The big thing, and I don't want to put this into the universe because I have mysterious powers to make things happen when I say them out loud. The first thing is he's made every start, so he's been healthy, which is always a big thing with Clayton Kershaw. Do you guys realize Clayton Kershaw is top 10 in Major League Baseball in strikeouts this year? In the year 2023, Clayton Kershaw is top 10 in baseball in strikeouts, and he's been awesome. And Clayton Kershaw, like after Pedro retired, Clayton Kershaw became my favorite starting pitcher to watch for the longest time. And he's been the most interesting guy in some ways for me to see him evolve as a pitcher while staying at an elite level. He's all either been hurt or awesome. He's never been anything other than that. But there was a clear decline coming in Clayton Kershaw's, like in every aspect. He was going to have to manage contact. He was not the same guy. And while nobody would claim Clayton Kershaw is the actual best pitcher in baseball in 2023, he's not a soft tosser who's just trying to get ground balls and hope they're like the Dodgers analytics department has positioned guys in the right position. Clayton Kershaw is a pretty friggin' dominant pitcher. Again, he was my pick for the NL Cy Young Award going into the season, which in a league that includes Spencer Strider is not a safe bet. Well, given Clayton Kershaw's back history is not a safe bet, but it makes me really happy that at least in the first half, I think if the Cy Young were given out in the NL right now, I think he beats Zach Allen. I think he wins the Cy Young right now. So again, there are better fantasy starting pitchers so far this year, but give me Clayton Kershaw as my all-star.
I love it.
Because ultimately, this is a made-up bullshit thing. It doesn't actually exist.
No, 15 games started so far. Like last 2 years, 22. So really fantastic. I thought you were, once you said feel good story, I thought you were going Big Maple.
That is a great story.
Yeah, I thought you were going there. All right, Jeff, give us another starting pitcher.
This is one, it's just with the injuries, and this is what happens when they can stay healthy, is Nathan Eovaldi.
Yep.
And he's been great. It's just, I kind of had blinders on him. I kind of got burnt from the year before. I need to go back and move that away and be like, okay, if we can get some health out of this guy, where should I be taking him at? And I think I just had him crossed off. I wasn't going to deal with it. And he's top five this year right now. The wins are helping. That's like a lot of the guys at the top. They'll get the wins. We were just talking about Detmers earlier, and it's like maybe someone's looking at his overall, like even like in a points league where he's got one win. It's like, well, I mean, it's an issue, but it's still like, okay, that's why maybe he overall he's not as high as some others. But no, it's Eovaldi. I guess you maybe paid in the around the 20th rounder for him, maybe top 15, and you're getting a top five starting pitcher right now.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, I didn't touch him in DC season. The projections liked him. He's bit out pretty good in the SGP, like a good value where he was going. I wanted to see him pitch in spring training. And once I, you know, saw him healthy, I was still kind of liked where he was in that spot. And I got him in a main. I got him in an auction. I got him in an OC. Kind of wish, like, man, I wish I took one shot at him in a draft champions. But he's definitely been really good. I mean, all I got to say, if you guys paid attention to stuff, plus maybe you would have grabbed him.
if you paid attention to the bat, if you paid attention to Steamer, you also would have
grabbed him. Everything lined up.
except for what Jeff said. And what I will say is my complaint earlier about my process this year was I had a list of 25 guys I wanted to grab, you know, five of them. Eovaldi was on that list. I wish I'd had conviction to actually pull the trigger because, like you said, Rob, there were lots of drafts, pretty much all the drafts. There was a point in the draft he was by far my best projected pitcher. And for whatever reason, I just didn't pull the trigger.
Kind of the concern like he has now. He's got that slight dip in the, you know, in velo last four games. It's going down.
There's no doubts. There are some troubling signs that do not happen. You do not need to resort to Stuff Plus declining to see that there may be some issues with Eovaldi. Obviously, I hope that they're nothing and they're just the random. Because the reality is velo goes down. Almost every single starting pitcher, if you look back on the course of their season, have dips and like ups and downs on velocity. And most of the time, it means nothing. It means sweet fuck all. It's just like I'm just not. I had a bad burrito last night, so I'm not throwing as hard. Sometimes it does mean something. So I'm not suggesting, before Jeff yells at me, that it doesn't matter. It, of course, matters greatly that my velocity is down a couple of miles. I'm going to be less productive. I mean, it's not necessarily a signal that he's got an injury. Like, just pitchers go through periods where they throw harder and then less hard, and it moves up and down over the course of a season. Sometimes it's a problem. Often it is absolutely nothing, and his next start, he comes back and is throwing hard again. So hopefully that's what it is with Eovaldi.
I like that. All right, I'm going to close this out here with a relief pitcher. I have several guys that I was considering. I looked at Carlos Estevez, you know, picked 275 in the main, you know, tons of saves, 19 saves. Then I looked up the top a little bit, Jordan Romano at pick 48 in the main event this year was just fantastic with 22 saves. I went to the big mountain that is Felix Bautista, just 69 strikeouts, just massive. And I it was between him and Alexis Diaz. So Alexis Diaz picked 113 in the mains, 20 saves, 55 Ks. And I was like, man, like, ooh. I was tough between these two to pick my all-star at this spot. And I eventually just landed on Diaz because that was that spot in the draft where it was – people who just drafted their first closer if they didn't get the, you know, they didn't want to spend up on the big guys. And they just took their shot with the Diaz, with the Holmes. One more guy is slipping my mind in that area. I think Bednar was a little earlier, right? Yeah. So, but just Diaz has just been, I mean, really fantastic. I couldn't believe when I actually looked at him and Edwin Diaz's first 91 games in their career.
I saw that. That was a great
so
tweet.
So similar. Like, my God, it's just eerily so close to each other. But I think he's been awesome. I think I totally didn't have any bit looking at his way all draft season at all. It was either in that 50-60 range in the ADP and or just then later, you know, in the 240s, mm-hmm. 250s. And totally skipped over Diaz, Bednar. I totally whiffed on those guys. And
with Diaz, was it the concern that they would stick with a committee like they had in previous years? The Reds were going to kind of suck. So how many wins were there going to be? Like, what were the things that were driving you off Diaz this winter?
No, 100%. That was it. It was still the committee thing stuck in my head. It was still a little bit of the walk rate and the ball percentage was super high. But, you know, he's the walk rate still is high, but he's overcome it with just impeccable strikeout skills and getting the ball. I think he's getting a little bit lucky right now with his fly ball line drive split. It's like really odd high line drive, but I just been, yeah, I totally went. A committee thing is, I think, the biggest scare out of everything, because, you know, it's like, all right, if he's going to get 15 saves here at pick 120, then like, what are we doing? But anyone speculates on he became the guy was right. And he's been fantastic for everybody who drafted him, for sure.
Once his brother went down, narrative street, they couldn't screw over Diaz. They had to give Diaz the job.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the analysis I did.
He went through too much trauma watching it live.
Exactly. It's like, right, you can't pitch him in the seventh inning after he's gone through that.
Yeah, yeah. Good. You know, see, Bell does have some human in him. Fantastic. Rob, do you want to close us out here with a Silver Linings playbook? You got anything for us this week?
I do. It's Oswald Peraza. It's driving me friggin' crazy.
Let's go.
Oswald, I love it. Peraza. It's like, I understand if you're one of, what's his ownership in the main event? It's like 98%. 96%. So he's owned in pretty, like, everything but three main events. I totally get if you're stashing Oswald Peraza, you are desperate to get him called up, because, like, he's awesome and he's going to save my hitting. And the Yankees lineup, if we're being honest, is crap right now. But a few points. You tweeted out, Rob, a couple of days ago. In June in AAA, Oswald Peraza has a 184 batting average, a 660 OPS. So he is not hitting like that. I get his AAA numbers look really good overall, but a 660 OPS right now in AAA, he's injured right now. Now, it's a new injury. We don't know a lot of details. Hasn't played the last 2 days, but the notion that he's just coming up, he's not, as far as we know, as of the time we were recording this Thursday, just before or just after lunchtime, depending if you're an early lunch or a late lunch guy, he's not healthy as of right now. We'll see the severity hopefully later today. Number three, the Yankees can't have been clearer about Volpe. Like, Volpe's not going anywhere. Now, teams say stuff all the time, and then they reverse it. But it will be a big reversal, and it'll be a reversal at the Steinbrenner level if he comes in and fills in for Volpe. So then the thinking is, well, it's Josh Donaldson. That's how he's going to get the job. And it's possible that at the All-Star break, they just decide, we've had enough with Josh Donaldson. And frankly, Josh Donaldson's a big enough douchebag. They might decide that if he's not hitting home runs, we've had enough with Josh Donaldson next week. But it's not clear to me at all that he is the automatic replacement if they decide to move on from Josh Donaldson. DJ LeMahieu is just as likely, I think, to get another month audition to hold down the third base job. Isaiah Kiner-Falefel might get another audition. So all of this adds up. I'm not saying that I don't think that Peraza at some point this season might have like a month stretch where he's a usable fantasy player. But I think there is a much better chance that he is not ready for the majors yet. They do think he needs more time in the minors. And there are a whole bunch of dominoes that need to fall into place before he gets called up. So I'm not saying if you're stashing him in the main, you should just cut him. But like, this is not some terrible injustice to the universe that Oswald Peraza is not on the Yankees right now. It may be an injustice that Josh Donaldson's still on there because he may be done. But I everything in my body says Oswald Peraza is not a star in the major leagues for the New York Yankees for 4 months or 3.5 months this year. I just don't think it's happening. And people are acting as if, like, he's one of the Reds prospects who absolutely deserve this shot. And like, we need to see him. It's like, nah, I don't know. There's lots of reasons to think. His projections certainly show him as a average major league player. Average major league players who are his age sometimes just need more time in AAA to become better than average players. I do like him long-term. So this is not an anti-Peraza long-term thing. I think he's going to be a good player at some point. That's my silver lining. Is feel free to drop Peraza, which of course means he's getting called up this afternoon.
Yeah, it's just pretty crazy. Like, you totally nailed it. Like, I think there's this conviction that he's just this remarkable upgrade from everybody. I just think at best it's a lateral move from Volpe. they showed their hand. I mean, Stanton was on the IL. Donaldson was on the IL. Bader was on the IL the last time he was here, and he started 10 of 17 games. So there's no lock that he's even going to start every game when he's up. And, you know, I trust a lot of prospect rankers, too. And take a look around the top 400 ranks. Do you see him anywhere? It's just, I don't know if it's just a Yankee thing. Is it the Yankee headline? Is it the power speed he showed in the minors? It's just odd. It just feels like there's other stashes that would
be. Where is he in James Anderson's top 400? Do you have it handy there, Rob?
I don't see him unless I'm plugging this in wrong.
He must be somewhere in the top 400. There's no way he's not a top 400 prospect for James. But my memory is that James is not particularly high on prospect.
I'm typing him into the search box on RotoWire.
Has his plate appearances gone over?
No, he still has rookie eligibility.
Yeah. So I mean, I could do something wrong. And I mean, I was over at Prospect Live too, and I didn't see him on their list too. Maybe I'm missing something. Maybe I'm spelling it wrong, but I spelled it
wrong. Maybe he has lost his eligibility, but I don't think he was up for long enough.
Yeah. But very good one, Rob. I'm totally a little befuddled by that one too. And you know, our close friend Matty Modica, he's got him and he loves him. And I was just this is not a versus you thing, Matty. It's just
I could be mad at right now. He's going to start texting me 14 different things as he's listening to this about how awesome Peraza is and like how crap. I'm not defending Josh Donaldson, just to be clear.
Right.
And I'm not. Matt's a great guy. He's one of my closest friends and a great fantasy player. So this is not personal. Matt knows this.
Right.
But it's not just Matt. This is not an anti-Matt rant, certainly, though he has made his views quite clear about Peraza.
100%. Like we talked
about. Is it because Modica is anti-Italian and wants Volpe to fail? Who can say?
It's nepotism. It's nepotism. It's frowned upon.
I kind of wonder if it's like all the prospects have already been called up that people were probably stashing.
Okay.
And I think that there's just a group of fantasy managers that like to go on prospects, and like Peraza's like one of the few that they can add to their team that they can take a chance on. It's like I don't even know who else is like gone eligible up and then back down. Right. Like is Fat still? I don't remember where he's at. Like
Fat was picked up in a ton of places by some really sharp fantasy owners I know this past Sunday, right. But it's a great point, Jeff. It's because of the peculiarities of the NFBC rules, which is where we're bias is, which is you're not allowed to pick up prospects unless they've been on a major league. Unless they've been dropped. So
I mean, Stan should be the one. Like I would have him if we had the option. I mean, there's a lot of them that way. Probably even Harrison if I needed pitching. Like there might be some other points of with the Giants. Like you might be able to start looking at some of them that way. But there's just so few options for you to like, you know, take a chance on. And this is like, oh, this is it. This is, you know, all we can get right now, unless we're willing to drop, you know, 550 fab on someone.
This is when you have to put in your Voit Muncy filter, Jeff, your popular Voit Muncy filter. Look for those, the next Joey Meneses that's going to come up and have a 200 plate appearance, you know, from August to September, that'll carry you.
There's just no one.
I know. I've been doing it too. I love this. It's like one of my only saved searches in that little prospect box there. And I love
it's such human nature that when you pick up a spec like prospect, you're convinced this guy, even if you hadn't thought about him, like it's literally, I bid $1 because I had an easy drop and he was available. Then suddenly you're convinced this has to be a thing. It has to be a thing. And if the team doesn't see the thing, then like what's wrong with the team? Even if it was literally just like he, like you said, it's a great point. He was the stash who was available. So he was an upgrade. I might as well see. I'll move on next week. And it's a bias that is totally natural and like normal. And I totally get it. But you just need to understand that that's all it is. And also when a team tells you what they think about a player, you should sometimes listen to them.
Yep, Fair. Yeah, 100% right about that. Fantastic. Way to close that out. Jeff, Rob, thank you for another fantastic episode. Thank you for everyone for tuning in to another episode of the Launch Angle Podcast. You could catch us 2 weeks from now back on the public feed. And if you want to join the Patreon, the Pro-Hitter Patreon, you can get all the Launch Angle episodes there, every single one that we produce. Thank you for tuning in.